Tensions between Sudan and South Sudan reached unprecedented levels after South Sudan captured Hejlej, an oil-rich border region in Sudan. Juba claims Hejlej is part of its territory. President Omar al-Bashir says it's time he liberates South Sudan from its rulers. Is the region on the verge of an all-out war? I'm Homa Lezgi, and this is another edition of News Analysis.
The United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has threatened to impose sanctions on South Sudan over seizure of the oil-rich town of Hejlej. Ban has also called on both sides to exercise maximum restraint, return to the negotiation table, and resolve their differences. But President Bashir has declared that Khartoum would punish the government of the South. He promised to, quote, liberate South Sudan from its ruling party. He made the promise addressing thousands of his supporters in the Sudanese state of North Kordofan. His remarks come a week after South Sudan captured Hejlej, leading to border clashes that have edged the two African neighbors closer to an all-out war. Shortly after the North's announcement, South Sudan said that in the past 24 hours it has repelled four Sudanese attacks. It says soldiers from both countries have clashed twice in the South Sudanese border state of northern Bahr al-Ghazal and once in western Bahr al-Ghazal. South Sudan occupied Hejlej on April 10, claiming to have stopped Sudan's military from continuing to launch ground and air attacks from the area. The South claims that it would only withdraw from Hejlej if the United Nations deployed a neutral force there. 3 days ago, the Sudanese parliament declared South Sudan an enemy, amounted to, quote, a declaration of war. There are widespread fears that the fighting will spread. It's already the worst since South Sudan gained independence in July after a decades-long civil war that killed nearly 2 million people. Hejlej has been internationally regarded as part of Sudan, but the South disputes that. Dozens of soldiers on both sides have been killed. For now, only time can tell what the outcome of this bloody conflict will be. Sudan observers say they're worried about the conflict can evolve into a full-blown war, deeply destroying both economies and disturbing the peace in the region.
Joining me now live from Washington, editor of the Africa Desk of the Executive Intelligence Review, Mr. Lawrence Freeman. Thank you very much for joining us, sir. I'd also like to welcome our guest in Detroit, editor of Pan-African Newswire, Mr. Abayomi Azikiwe, and also joining us on the line from London, author of Darfur in Perspective, Mr. David Hoyle. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. I'll put my first question to our guest in Washington, Mr. Freeman. Mr. Freeman, let's start with the bigger picture and then focus on specifics. So let me ask about the formation of South Sudan and its split from Sudan first. What was the reason behind this? There are people who are saying now it's a repeat of what's happened in Palestine. They're even calling South Sudan the second Israel in the region. What do you think was the reason for the emergence of South Sudan? Was it oil or are there other reasons?
Well, I would have to tell you that I personally oppose the separation of Sudan into two countries. I believe it should have been one sovereign nation. And I think there were clear political forces in London and in the United States that were pushing for this separation for their own purposes. That is, they want to use a separate South Sudan nation as a battering ram against Sudan and Khartoum. Their agenda is to overthrow President al-Bashir and to break up Sudan actually into multiple parts. This is a policy, as they say, came out of London. It's being pushed by the U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice and other groups here in Washington. So they don't, the separation was not necessary. And because of the obsessive nature of having this separation without settling any of the underlying issues of borders and oil, the seeds were planted for exactly this type of confrontation, which unfortunately I predicted would happen. So we're in a very bad situation, and the whole country right now is in danger, both Sudans, because of this policy.
Mr. Azikiwe, let's bring you into the discussion as well. I'd like to have your view on this. What was the reason for this split, and do you agree with what our guest there in Washington is saying?
Well, we have to go back to the era of British colonialism in Sudan. During the 19th century, The British invaded the region during the period of British colonialism in Sudan all the way up until 1956, when the country became independent. The country was divided into various regions. In fact, it was not in a sense that it had a national identity. And of course, the initial civil war erupted in 1955, right on the eve of national independence of Sudan. The war between the southern region of Sudan and the north, largely based in Khartoum, lasted from 1955 all the way up until 1972. There was a peace agreement signed in 1972. However, again in 1983, there was the eruption of another internal conflict that brought about the formation of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement and the Sudan People's Liberation Army that was headed by John Garang. That lasted for 20 years. The African Union, as well as other international organizations, were involved in mediating the civil war in Sudan. They came up with a peace agreement which mandated a referendum on the future of South Sudan. John Garang, who mysteriously died in a helicopter crash just on the eve of the resolution of this conflict, was not a proponent of national independence or separation from the northern part of Sudan. Right. I believe his position was that he wanted autonomy for the southern part of Sudan. So the division of the country is really just exacerbated tensions between the two capitals. And of course, there is divisions that are taking place in the south as well. In Jonglei and other areas, there are dissident factions that have emerged from the SPLA that have also been involved in conflicts.
Let's bring in Mr. Hoyle now on the line from London. Mr. Hoyle, you've written a book about Darfur, and that's why I want to ask you. Darfur had dominated the news for several years, but there is hardly any news on the area after South Sudan separated from Sudan. Now there's news that rebels from Sudan's Darfur region, together with the SPLA, are fighting hand in hand against Sudan's army. Was Darfur, in your opinion, a planned and hyped crisis that led actually to Sudan's partition?
Well, I think in many ways it played into those who wish to see, in effect, a breakup of Sudan. The war in Darfur, in effect, was a war between one or two Islamic factions within the Sudanese government. Obviously, the government being led by Field Marshal al-Bashir, and there was an Islamist faction led by Dr. Jarabi. And it was essentially a national fight, which was actually fought out in Darfur. But it has played into the hands of those people within Washington, D.C. And elsewhere who seek to break up what was Africa's largest country, Africa's largest Islamic country, into as many bits as they can. And we now see a continuation of that policy, in effect, with what has been happening in the south over the last number of weeks.
Mr. Freeman, another point that I want to bring out with you on here is in an ironic move concerning the first question that I asked you. The UN has asked Israel to send a squad of policemen to South Sudan to help keep order in the fledgling nation this week. Why should Israel police South Sudan, and what is the connection? What's the aim?
Well, first of all, I think that would be an absolutely idiotic move that would further inflame the tensions in the area. You already have U.S. military forces in South Sudan, and you have Israeli military forces in South Sudan as of now, providing military training and security. So Israel would not be a neutral player and would antagonize the people in Khartoum. I just returned, I was in southern Kordofan on Thursday in the Nuba Mountains in Kadugli, and I see the danger that is now ongoing, which is that North Sudan cannot develop its economy properly. They're suffering economically and will not be able to develop their economy with this war. South Sudan is in even far worse shape, having no economy at all. And this attack in Hezlik by South Sudan is a direct violation of the sovereignty of Sudan. The town is marked in Sudan. This was agreed upon by the demarcation of the CPA. And this is a direct provocation to bring out a greater crisis that will bleed both countries. Mm. And there should be an immediate action by the world community to condemn what South Sudan has done and to order them back into their country before tensions flare up even more.
Well, as a result of the capture of Hijrij, Mr. Azikiwe, the Sudanese parliament declared South Sudan an enemy. Omar al-Bashir said that he'll liberate South Sudan from its rulers. So is he announcing the beginning, actually, of an all-out war, in your opinion?
Well, the situation is very tense. The former South African president, Thabo Mbeki, who has been a mediator in the ongoing conflict between the two countries, has appealed to the United Nations and to other international bodies to step in to try to prevent the resumption of an all-out military conflict in Sudan. There was a lot of economic development taking place in Sudan, particularly over the last decade. They were producing 500,000 barrels of oil per day. One important factor in all of this is that the relationship between the People's Republic of China and the Republic of Sudan has strengthened over the last few years. In fact, 80% of the oil concessions for the development of petroleum in Sudan have been held by firms and by state agencies from the People's Republic of China. So if we look at this very closely, in a way, it is a proxy war between the United States and China, as well as Israel on the side of the United States. The Israelis have supported the South Sudanese along with the United States in regard to their military apparatus and their training. Also in the region of Darfur, many of the groups there were supported by the U.S. as well as by the State of Israel. The State of Israel has carried out military operations inside of Sudan. 2 years ago, they bombed a convoy of immigrant workers who were just transporting people from Sudan into Egypt. They claim that this convoy was smuggling arms from Iran through Egypt into Gaza. Last year also, there was bombing right. that was carried out by Israeli forces in Sudanese territory. So this is clearly an international conflict.
Right. Some interesting points you raised there, Mr. Azikiwe. I'll come back to them. But first, Mr. Hoyle, on the line, let's have your view on this issue of a war now, the impending war. A southern government spokesman has said that South Sudan is only defending its territory and considers Sudan a friendly nation. So do you think this is about the South trying to portray Sudan as the aggressor here, or is it actually not seeking war? If it is not seeking war, why do you think South Sudan did capture Hijrij in the first place?
Well, I've actually watched the SPLA for about 15 or 16 years now, and I have to say a sad thing is that one cannot accept at face value virtually any statement coming from that organization, and of course now it's in government. I think what you've seen in the last number of weeks and months is a very old tactic whereby the government of South Sudan, which unfortunately is very, very little more than a failed state already, is now seeking to divert attention from its own domestic chaos. There are at least, I think, between 6 and 10 armed militias fighting within South Sudan against the government of South Sudan on a variety of ethnic reasons, regional reasons, and, of course, to actually have more of a share of wealth and power in the south, which is actually being denied to certain regions and ethnic groups. So even actually within the south itself, there's a tremendous cocktail of dangerous movements and developments. And of course, it's a classic way of actually diverting attention away from that. And that, I think, is certainly one of the reasons why they, in effect, invaded Sudan a few weeks ago. It's a very, very dangerous development. I've known it. It's extraordinary, but not unexpected, unfortunately.
Well, Mr. Freeman, I'd like to just put the issue that was put forward there by our guest in Detroit, and that's what Mr. Azikiwe says is a proxy war. Now, Mr. Freeman, the U.S., we know, does pay the salaries for the Sudan People's Liberation Army, the SPLA, and according to one report, over $100 million in 2011 alone was allocated for that. And that brings the question, does a country really have independence when a foreign power pays its army's salaries, and whose orders the army is really going to follow? So what do you think about this issue of a proxy war here?
Well, I look at it differently, because if you go back to the beginning of the current government in Khartoum, with President Bashir coming to power in 1989, you've had a fanatical faction, what I would call the British American faction. Like, for example, if you look at U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice, her postgraduate work was conducted as a graduate in London, and she's a follower of the London ideology. And the power of City of London and Wall Street is to make sure that there are no sovereign nations in Sudan, in Africa. And Sudan is one of the most important, maybe one of the three most important nations in Africa. So the policy from the very beginning has been to break up the country and overthrow the Governor Bashir and weaken the NCP. So what you've seen is that a group of people have now become the major backers of South Sudan. You're saying they're paying the salaries, but even more than that, they have made South Sudan almost a client state, so that when South Sudan takes actions, they believe that they have the support of the United States behind them. Now, when they shut down their oil, their own oil production, they're essentially destroying themselves and putting themselves in a position where they could be destabilized internally by the inability to even deliver minimal services. The United States will not bail them out, because the United States and the transatlantic countries are on a full-scale financial collapse. So they will not bail them out, but they're cynically using them. They're using them for their own agenda, which is to destroy the nation of Sudan. And that's the danger. China is not a problem. The problem is the West has had no other policy towards Sudan for the last 20 years than to actually destroy it and break it up into several competing entities.
Mr. Azikiwe, speaking about the reasons behind the U.S.'s intention, if it indeed has that intention, to destabilize Sudan, one issue that was raised there by a guest in Washington, the cutting off of Sudan's oil supply, how is that going to benefit the United States?
Well, they want to move the Chinese interests out of Sudan. China has made major moves in regard to establishing economic and political relationships with various countries throughout the African continent. And this, of course, is a direct threat to the United States as well as other Western imperialist countries. I'd also like to mention one other factor in this whole scenario. That is the role of the International Criminal Court. 3 years ago, the ICC issued warrants for the arrest of President Omar Hassan al-Bashir, as well as other leading figures in the Sudanese government. This, of course, was done to put more political pressure on the Sudanese government to intensify the animosity that is leveled against that government by various forces throughout the international community. Now, despite the fact that Sudan is not even a signatory to the so-called Rome Statute, which established the ICC, nor is the United States, politically, these indictments are used by the United States and by other Western imperialist countries to, in fact, attempt to isolate the government in Sudan. So we have both the pseudo-legal rationale that's being utilized to isolate the government in Sudan. We have the U.S. concern over the rising role of the People's Republic of China and Africa. And also, we have the desire on the part of the United States, the Pentagon, the U.S. Africa Command, the Central Intelligence Agency, to enhance their control, direct control, over the politics and the economics of the African continent.
Mr. Hoyle, now looking at what lies ahead for Sudan, what can be done to help the situation? According to one estimate, the International Crisis Group in one report was saying that a diplomatic pressure to cease hostilities and return to talks must be followed. And they were saying that they would want action from the UN Security Council, from the US, China and other key states involved here. Now, Mr. Hoyle, do you think that is the way forward here? Maybe it's better for the African Union to get involved? Or rather, what is the option now if you want to stop war from happening?
Well, one of the points I'd make ultimately is that you aren't necessarily dealing with rational actors in terms of a party of government in South Sudan. You know, to have a cut off their own oil a production over this squabble over transit rights, to have then actually gone into a sovereign country, invaded it, with the view to destroying the oil infrastructure within Sudan's major oil region, infrastructure which again it actually needs itself in the south to get their oil through in transit, is the most unimaginable act of vandalism. So, you know, we are speaking about actions, you know, by a government that are in no ways rational. So that's actually one of our big difficulties. The other point, which I think one of your other speakers made, is that it, in many ways, I think the government in Juba does believe it's acting with the sanction of one or two Western countries. It's mm-hmm. it's been mollycoddled for so long by the United States and by Britain and even other sort of European Union countries that it believes it's actually acting in their interests as well. So it's going to be difficult to persuade them otherwise. And that is right. The difficulty. In terms of the groups who can intervene, I mean, you don't actually ultimately want intervention in Africa. Intervention in Africa generally has been disastrous. The African Union, I don't think, has enough muscle in any instance to do so. An action at the UN Security Council, you know, I'm very skeptical that anything positive would come out of that.
Right. We're running out of time. I'd like to put the last question to our guest in Washington, Mr. Freeman. If you can, in less than a minute, share your view with us on this. Is it better for the African Union to get involved? Is UN intervention what's going to handle the situation? What do you think? Is dialogue even possible?
I think the only action that's going to stop South Sudan now, which is the aggressor country, is the U.S. And this would have to be a total reversal from Susan Rice and from President Obama and from the U.S. State Department. If the U.S. made very clear, unequivocally, that they oppose this and they must pull out, that might be the only voice that South Sudan listens to, because they do depend so much on support from the U.S. If that doesn't happen, then I don't think any other political power grouping in the world has the same amount of clout and influence. Now, the South Sudanese may be using this as a bargaining chip and may go to the brink and pull back, which they've done before. And one would hope that it doesn't go over the brink. But we're in a very dicey political situation now, and I would appeal to my government and the British government to make absolutely clear to the SPLM that this is unacceptable and to get out now.
And fortunately enough, I'm just being told that we just have under a minute left, so let's also give concluding remarks to our guest in Detroit, Mr. Azikiwe. What's your view on this? Do you agree with the comments made there by our guest in Washington?
No, I don't. I don't think the U.S. government is going to change its policy. It's the same policy it had under the Bush administration. They want to knock out any country in Africa that does not follow the line of U.S. imperialism.
Mr. Abba Yomi Azikiwe, editor of Pan-African Newswire, joining us there live from Detroit. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. A big thank you as well to our guest in Washington, editor of Africa Desk of the Executive Intelligence Review, Mr. Lawrence Freeman. And also joining us on the line from London was Mr. David Hoyle, author of the book Darfur in Perspective. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. And thank you, viewers, for staying with News Analysis. Until our next program, from me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.